Capital Market Insights from ICMA.
Greetings and a warm welcome to the ICMA FinTech Podcast, a series where we explore the technological innovation in and transformation of the international capital markets. I'm Oliver Tinkler, Head of Communications and Press for ICMA. As an international trade association, ICMA is involved with the intricate landscapes of primary, secondary, repo and collateral markets, and we understand the pivotal role of market electronification. Throughout this series, we'll bring you conversations with ICMA's fintech vendor members, the driving forces behind the innovation shaping our capital markets. And today, we're delighted to be joined by Henry Adams, Chief Product Officer at Treasury Spring. Henry, many thanks indeed for joining us today. Just to kind of open the conversation, can you tell us a little about yourself and your company?
Yes, absolutely. Ollie, good afternoon. Many thanks to you and to the ICMA for having us. So, without further ado, Henry Adams, I've been around fixed income and repo markets for around 20 years, starting life on the buy side at Barclays Global Investors, moving over to the Royal Bank of Canada in capital markets for a decade. The last 6.5 years I've spent in financial technology, so pretty broad bases covered there. In terms of Treasury Spring, what we do is bring cash to the secured and other markets that previously was trapped, unable to access what is effectively dominant money market product.
And if you think about the core innovation or the unique features of your solution, what is it that sets your fintech solution or product apart?
Yeah, sure. Good question. We absolutely are a financial technology company. That is how we are able to join all of the dots that we do. That's how we scale. And so, look, what we've actually created, sounds slightly crazy, but true, is create our own new financial instrument that is called a fixed term fund. Now, what it does, pretty much what it says on the tin, we construct funds which are issued for a fixed tenor at a rate with an obligor that is known and chosen by our clients. Now, the real innovation here has also been actually one of legal construct. And so by issuing fund units, effectively anybody can purchase a fund, you and I, off the shelf, no problem. And really, look, that is where the magic lies. One thing is having a pretty interface and a user experience that people enjoy. What we have solved for is that settlement piece. As we all know, the burden on companies to engage in something as complex as repo is gigantic. You know, if you think about the fact that, look, you need custody, you need legal expertise, you need dealer relationships, you need detailed knowledge on collateral markets. And then, you know, added to that, all the various other departments that one requires to do something like this properly and in a fashion that gives you the benefits that you're seeking, which is risk mitigation, whilst also ensuring that a fair yield is extracted from the transaction. And so if you think about the client base, which is often what we're asked about, particularly when we speak to our banking counterparts, you know, ours is a big world. It's effectively all of the cash that can't get to the trillions of dollars deep repo markets, but ours is also a market in cash that is many trillions deep. And so typically what we see our clients currently able to participate in is, you know, fairly bog standard deposits, be that overnight, it could be for term. Alongside that, some folks might also purchase money market funds. Now, those are both perfectly good and acceptable tools. Where we come along is to say, look, here's a platform that we've created. We have three core verticals. You're able to participate in all of our verticals and all of our obligors, provided they meet your risk criteria, with a single onboarding. So our client base can effectively sign up once using the fund documentation that gives us effectively the access to the all, if you like. And those three verticals, the first is access to government and SSA. So think of that as a proxy to the risk-free rate. The middle vertical is financial in flavor. So that could be various structures that bring liquidity to our banks, both on an unsecured and potentially under-collateralized basis. The second vertical within that financial bucket being full fat repo. So here we're talking about haircuts that people would generally accept as correctly over-collateralized diversified baskets, which we would then distribute as a fully secured product to our client base. Anything else would distribute as effectively unsecured. And if there is some collateral, obviously that is only a benefit to the end user. The final pillar is, again, a tool for diversification. And so if you think about the client that might have a cohort of 10, 15, 20 banks, and they want to truly diversify when thinking about where to place liquidity, adding a 21st bank might not do it. And so this third pillar, where we have a joint venture with the London Stock Exchange, is in non-financial corporate credit, so short-dated lending to highly rated institutions. It's worth mentioning that on the platform, everything is single A minus or better. And in terms of currency mix, we're currently live with 7 currencies. What we do is when we come across a problem, we solve for it. And so that's really where the technology, the speed of execution, the pace of offering new products comes into the fold.
That's great. Thank you so much for that. I mean, just thinking back to the genesis of Treasury Spring, can you talk a little about what inspired the development of this solution and how it addressed a need or continues to address a need or a specific challenge in the capital markets?
Yeah, look, absolutely. The history of the firm is sort of manifold, and perhaps we'll skip going into too much detail here, but certainly happy to pick that up at another point in time. But look, really, the core premise was that there's a huge swathe of liquidity out there that currently is really in products that are of a lesser quality, shall we say. And so it's all been about, this gigantic opportunity in terms of being able to deliver this liquidity to the markets that effectively would greatly welcome that liquidity, but doing it in a fashion that is scalable, that is productized, if you like, and removes, like I say, all those gigantic barriers that exist to get people into the repo markets. And to give you an idea of the power of the toolkit that we've created, effectively, we have products now with, almost double digit repo counterparties. We have over 1,000 products on the portal across those 7 currencies. And folks can come in and participate in, for example, gilt repo, pretty vanilla box standard product for all of us that have been in and around the market for a long time. But we have folks that can subscribe to that product for as low as £250,000. And so, in terms of our client base, we can target family offices all the way through to FTSE 100s and jurisdictionally equivalent elsewhere who we do cater to. And so effectively it's a solution that's scalable, but also deals with, the sorts of clients that typically just wouldn't be on the radar. And what we do is simplify for our banking counterparts the ability to take that liquidity, because effectively what we're doing, where we do pool, we never pool credit. What we do is pull clients. And so we've gone from over the last 5.5 years, 0 to just shy of 400 clients. Our first fixed term fund was issued for the rather paltry sum of £100,000, not exactly capital markets, wholesale financing at its finest. But look, over the last 5.5 years, what we've managed to do is grow that. And our ambitions are not to stop there, of course, or to double, but really take advantage and deliver the liquidity that's out there into the banks in size.
Can I kind of return to a point you made earlier about the three pillars that you mentioned of Treasury Spring, or perhaps it was 4, pardon my memory. But I'm just thinking about kind of emerging trends in the industry and how your product is positioned to evolve over the medium term. Where do you see those, maybe a different pillar emerging? How are you going to grow the business?
Yeah, sure. Look, absolutely. Good question, Ollie. And I think in terms of the potential liquidity out there that can be delivered to these markets, it's almost bottomless, I would say. And so doing what we do well and better and scaling faster is how we can deliver the most value to our banking client base. In terms of the upcoming trends, regulation remains front and center for everybody. The Basel III endgame, as well as all the various liquidity ratios, the important accounting dates, all of this sort of stuff falls into where we are working with our counterparties to create solutions, and we are doing that, day in, day out. We have the ability and flexibility to do so. And so, look, in part, it's that ability to adapt to the regulation. the ability to bring liquidity that otherwise can't get to this market. And then also the ability really to tailor solutions. These are all things that are going to help us with our growth. Other areas to consider that are more macro in nature, if you like, would be things such as regulation in the US around money market funds, where effectively, you know, still to date, despite government money market funds being significantly larger and prime money market funds being significantly smaller than they were prior to a bunch of regulation coming through, is that they still represent, those prime funds, a quarter of CP purchases in the US. The regulation goes live in October. And unfortunately, what that does mean is that, you know, certain providers have withdrawn from that part of the market. This is important because that CP market for banks to finance themselves has been incredibly valuable and vital. And it's a tool where price can be used as a mechanism to go out into the wholesale markets and raise those funds that are required. So you've got two pressures happening on both sides for the financial institutions. One is one pool of liquidity is effectively being regulated out of existence. And then on the other side, you have regulation saying you need more liquidity and it needs to look like this. Mm-hmm. And so we're kind of at the heart of that. And because of our unique structure, and it's being done by design in terms of maturity match, that's a very key point to make, is that what we'll never do is have a run on a fund, because effectively, in a simple example, you know, we might buy a 30-day UK Treasury bill. What our client would buy is a 30-day UK Treasury bill fixed-term fund.
Just thinking as a supplementary question to this, obviously AI is on everyone's lips at the moment. In this future that you are constructing, you know, does AI have a role for you? Obviously, there's complexity in what you just said, and I wonder whether that could be tackled by integrating AI.
Yeah, look, good question. Absolutely. If you look at all the various funding rounds happening in the world, in more close to our world and in terms of how we're structured and backed, you know, it is absolutely a big deal right now. Some folks compare it to sort of crypto going back before the winter that, you know, has defrosted. Absolutely, I see uses for AI. What we have is obviously a great deal of data, and that's only growing as we grow our client base and as we grow in terms of complexity. There will be a role. We already, to a degree, do use it. It's doing some fairly rudimentary things. There's ways that we do see value in expanding on it. We do have machine learning experts in-house to develop, you know, those various ideas into something that's commercially viable. I would have some caution at this stage around AI and overselling the opportunity. If you look at the companies today that are able to get those large rounds away, that are getting all of the attention from the media, you know, these firms have been around for a long time, refining what they are doing, and have finally found sort of product market fit, if you like, and something that's scalable, that's commercially viable. And whilst we're here, we might as well touch quickly on blockchain, where I think as well, you know, in our market, we are definitely seeing developments, and there's value in those developments, but these things do take a great deal of time. You know, one can sometimes look for a magic bullet, and be it AI, be it blockchain, be it crypto. And, you know, to me, at least, the answer is that, you know, there's absolutely value in these technologies, but it takes time to make them something that really solves for a problem. And that is where the focus should be.
I suppose kind of turning the clocks back now to perhaps a kind of a simpler time when Treasury Spring had just started. Can you speak a little about how the market welcomed your solution to begin with, and, you know, what obstacles you faced in those early days?
Yeah, no, look, there were definitely challenges, as you can imagine. The biggest one probably was, you know, who are these guys? This is a great idea, but who are these guys? And am I really going to give you, you know, put a number on it, 1 million, 10 million, 100 million in my liquidity, to then sort of see what happens? And so, as with all technologies, and particularly ones that are in our world, it comes down to trust and building trust. And so, you know, what we found worked best was to build that over time and not just go after whales and think that, again, back to sort of the idea of magic bullets, there's no such thing, frankly. The only way to get there is to work hard, to be committed, and to continue to demonstrate value to folks. And so, you know, if you look at the sort of shape of one way to simplify this, the shape of our AUM and the growth, you know, starting out, it looked fairly flat and gradually scaled up depending on the scale you put on the thing. But if you apply today's scale, you know, it's looking hockey stick shaped. And so it got there in the end. We all know what I mean. J curve. So, you know, it's the path isn't easy, I would say.
Well, I mean, all the greatest of luck for that. You mentioned earlier about kind of regulatory compliance, and you know, we've talked about innovating and innovation in your solution. How did you kind of balance that, balancing the innovation with regulatory compliance, and you know, especially in the constantly evolving landscape of fixed income?
Yeah, sure. So prior to selecting Jersey, which is where our funds are based, and the reasons for that I'll go into shortly, there was a degree of jurisdictional shopping involved, shall we say. You know, there's within Europe three core centres that really do funds well, being Luxembourg, Ireland and Jersey. Jersey was chosen because it serves our unique structure best. And so a great deal of time was spent figuring out, you know, really, where can the structure come together? How is it possible to legally segregate on a credit by credit basis the opportunities for our investors to subordinate us in the structure and to give that comfort that, look, this is robust, this is a wholesale solution, there's no treasury springness to the risk, if you like. And so working with lawyers in Jersey, as well as the Jersey Financial Services Commission, the path was clear for the firm in terms of direction. And of course, then, regulation. And so we are regulated. We're regulated as an alternative investment fund for the purposes of marketing. But that legal structure in Jersey effectively is our toolkit that enables us to do what we do cleanly.
So we're recording this in the kind of early days of May 2024. And I'd just like to ask a question about, I suppose, your near-term aspirations for Treasury Spring, just heading in as we head into the second half of 2024 and into 2025, shock horror. Where do you see the, you know, what are your, I suppose, key aspirations over the medium term?
Yeah, good question. So look, let's go back a step, perhaps to May of last year. Since then, we've doubled the team size to just over 50. And so a big part of what we've been doing is making sure that we get the right people in to grow this business and to push it to the boundaries that we know are possible, which are none, frankly, given the depth of liquidity and the demands of the banks only growing. And so in part, of course, it's been training these folks up. And so I think we're going to see continued weaponization, for want of a better word, of these superstars within the business. You know, there's going to be some continued hiring, but it feels as though really the core initiatives now are certainly very clear to us, and the focus is precise. And it's several fold. So in part, additional jurisdictions that we can market into. And so thinking about those other pools of liquidity that we can bring in and then distribute to our counterparties. And a big one coming up this year. So we're opening an office, our first international office outside of where we currently sit in London, and that is in New York City. So doing a good job there, getting that office opened, bringing the right people together to effectively start a startup within a startup, if you like. So some great challenges there. And look, you've touched on it already, and because it is so valid, particularly speaking to this part of what we do, which is we're continuing to work with clients that for one reason or another have certain regulatory hurdles themselves. And that's not just from the banks that we service as a provider of liquidity, but also the more financial counterparties that we see in terms of bringing liquidity to our platform. And so working with them, working with regulators, turning what is effectively dead cash, useless to all, into something that is valuable for all. That is really at the core of what we do, is transforming liquidity into something that is valued and duly rewarded.
That's great. Well, Henry, that's all from me today. So I'd like to say many thanks indeed for joining me today on the podcast. And if you'd like to learn more about ICMA's work across fintech and digitalization, then please look at the episode description where we've included links to useful resources. But again, thank you, Henry. Lovely to speak to you and speak to you again soon. And join us next time. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Many thanks, Ollie. All the best.
Thank you for listening. For more ICMA podcasts and further information on capital markets, please visit our website, icmagroup.org.